Kia ora and welcome to Meet the Newbies. After the 2017 general election happened, a lot of new MPs entered Parliament for the first time. However, many of these new MPs may not be well known outside of their electorates. To try and change this, I decided to do a podcast, meeting with one of the new MPs each time. This gives us the chance to get to know our new lawmakers while giving them the chance to show who they are to the public. Today, we're speaking to Kerry Allen. She's a Labour List MP from the East Coast who has been described as a rising star. Shall we find out about her?
Kia ora, Kerry. How's your day going?
It's not too bad.
How would you describe yourself in a sentence?
I would describe myself as someone who loves our people and our planet.
What's your background?
I was raised in a little place called Paengaroa, which is on the western side of the East Coast electorate. Population about 800. Went to a school that sort of had a school populace that waned between, I think, about 26 students to 56 in about a heyday. My parents, my dad's he was a meat worker. He worked at AFCO. And my mum, she was a stay-at-home mum until she worked in a rest home as a cook. And I was brought up very much in a small community. And there was a couple of things that were very important to our community. One, that we you had to work very hard, we come from working class background, and two, always be in service of our community. Because when the going gets rough, it's going to be the community that picks you up, and in turn, maybe you'll be there to pull other people through as well. So those are very important values in our community and my family. And when my father was laid off in the late 80s from the meatworks, my family relocated to a small town called Tikaraka, which is just northwest of Gisborne. It's up in the high country. My parents farmed in an area up in the Kanakanaya Valley. And so I went from a burgeoning population of 800 in Paengaroa to an even more metropolis scope population of 400. And attended a wee school there, Tikaraka. And yeah, it was great. It was a good way to grow up on farms. My professional background though, has been in law primarily. Commenced my practice in constitutional law for a firm founded by Sir Geoffrey Palmer, and then I found my way into, I love commercial law and negotiations and whatnot, so I found my feet strongly in the commercial world and particularly in the primary industries.
Who would you describe as your greatest hero?
My nana. Her name is Kiri Tapu Wilson, and she had 11 children, and she was she led from behind, had a very compassionate outlook, but ruled with she ruled with her eyes. She didn't need to talk much, but everybody knew exactly what she was thinking. And you didn't even need to see her. Like she was a bit of a private eye, you know. So she'd talk to everybody else but you about issues. She knew everything that was going on. Everybody would try and hide from her. She had about 67, I think, children and grandchildren when she passed away. And she was a formidable character that I aspire to be like one day.
When did you realise you wanted to get into politics?
Well, I studied politics at university, but I studied it really because I didn't grow up in an overtly political home, so I didn't really know much about our constitutional environment, you know, and I wanted just to understand how things worked because things didn't always seem fair. So I thought, well, if I think that they're not fair, then I need to understand how stuff works. So I studied law, sociology and politics. So I got involved in Young Labour when I was 18 and found myself shortly thereafter working for our then Prime Minister, Helen Clark. So I think what I realised pretty early on in the piece is that this political environment was one, but there were many, many other platforms and environments to impact change, and I wanted to understand, I guess, the broad plethora of what all of those were. So through social movements, environmental movements, etc., etc. So I think I spent a lot of time trying to understand just the lay of the land, how things work. So I guess when you say get involved in politics, if you mean this political environment, I always thought if I was ever going to get into central government politics, it would be at a later stage in life, a lot later. Politics is a funny wee thing because it's all about timing. And so for this particular electorate that I wanted to run in, the member who had sat and held that position, she retired at the last election and the East Coast didn't have a candidate. So I knew that if I didn't run now, somebody else was likely to take the role and they would have it for a long time. So I either had to jump now or forego. So I decided to jump.
So, I mean, what changes to New Zealand law would you want to make to try and keep those regions clean and green?
A few ideas up my back pocket. Particularly interested in, well, our economic environments and arrangements. One area in particular is the way that we, and I say we, the populace, can assess the impacts of our free trade agreement. I'm really keen to see in our public disclosures the impacts of every trade agreement region by region, and specifically by industry and through jobs, because that's really what matters to our regions. What flow through from our trade agreements that we enter into, what will the impacts be in our jobs? Will it be job creation, job losses? If so, how so, etc. So that's something that I'm pretty passionate about. not many other people are passionate about that, but I am. But then there's some real just basic things, like there's been massive funding cuts to just our core infrastructure. So whilst the roads of national significance have been Wellington's been a wonderful benefactor of that project, we've had our roading funds significantly reduced. So you drive in my electorate, massive potholes, it's really hard to conduct trade, yet your vehicles get pretty thrashed. I'm also keen to see our region supported in terms of just having basic IT connectivity. So the fact that I can drive for about 7 hours in my electorate without being able to use my cell phone is pretty poor in a modern trading environment. So I think that we got to really support our regions in some of those just basic infrastructural ways.
Let's say you become a minister. Which ministry, if you could choose, would help you to achieve your goals?
First of all, I don't think I'll get anywhere near the portals of power for a very long time, so let's just see how I go. But in terms of select committees and areas that I would like to, and portfolios I'd like to, you know, participate in, primary industries, so I've got a background in particularly horticulture and strong affinity with our horticultural development, and that's because of the job impacts in our region. Regional economic development is something I'm pretty passionate about.
What is your dream for New Zealand, urban and rural?
Well, I think, you know, growing up in the 80s, we used to have this brand put out to the world, which was, you know, New Zealand is a clean, green country. And we know that has ebbed away over time in terms of the practical implications. We've still got the motto, but the practicality, the fact that we can't swim 70% of our registered monitored rivers is an issue. So I'd like to see in my lifetime New Zealand really embody that phrase, but I'd add one more part to it. So that New Zealand was a clean, green and equitable country. And I would like us to be a leader again. We, in the 30s, we were world renowned for our social development policy. We implemented the first comprehensive welfare state system in the world. We were leaders, you know, and I would like to see us be that again. But it does mean that we're going to have to be a little bit bold in the way that we look at our governance structures and environment in a neoliberal world. And I think there's a lot of thinking going on about that now, not just here in New Zealand, but globally. I watched a speech by Naomi Klein the other day. She was addressing the Labour Party in the UK. And she said that one of the impacts about neoliberalism, your high school students won't be interested in this, but it's fun, is that it's kind of thwacked the creativity. Now, it's whacked away the creativity that we have when it comes to envisaging a different world. And that resonated with me because I think that we're at a precipice almost in our global evolution, is that we really need to fundamentally rethink the way that some things are done, because we're seeing vast growing inequalities, immense damage to our environment, and we sort of just keep on keeping on. But the same old, it's not going to work.
You know, lay out some conscience issues to see how you're doing that. So decriminalisation of abortion?
Decriminalisation of abortion, yes. Yeah. I'm a strong supporter and advocate for that. Of course, the necessary caveats need to be engaged, so there needs to be length around the period by which, you know, there needs to be a lot of policy thinking, I think, around how long in terms of the pregnancy. That's what I mean to say. Yeah. What's it called? Gestation or whatever it is. You can't terminate, for example, like at 40 weeks. There needs to be some policy infrastructure to go around it.
Decriminalization of and legalization of cannabis?
If it's a yes, no, my answer has been no. If I can be grey, my answer is that I would like to. If we're going to decriminalize, there needs to be a substantive investment into our health system, because a lot of drug and alcohol addiction and whatnot, but the health issues, and there needs to be. I think that what they've got over in, goodness me, other countries just slipped off my mind at the moment. But some of the tools that they're utilising overseas, where they decriminalise, they substantively up the budget and allocations to alcohol rehabilitation, drug awareness programs, and threat, and just so much support around the impacts of drugs on people's day-to-day life. So then again, it's the way that it'd be done in the policy implications here. But it's one I'm a little tricky on.
Next conscience issue, retention of the Māori seats, yes or no?
Yes.
Do you support the foreign deployment of New Zealand troops?
Depends on which capacity.
So I mean like going to Afghanistan.
Well, we've always been, you know, we've always participated in a lot of our global foreign affairs through a peacekeeping type mandate, and I support the ongoing practice of that.
What would you do to the current number of MPs? Do you think it's good how it is, or would you raise or lower?
I don't know whether I'd raise it. I haven't sat there long enough to know, so yeah, I don't know whether I'd raise it, though. It seems quite busy downstairs already.
Assisted dying, how would you vote on that?
I've said to my constituents that I'm more likely to say yes than no at this stage, but open to. It's not an area I know well, but so I'm open to discussions on it, but I'm more to yes than no at the moment.
If you had to be trapped on a desert island with an MP from an opposing party, who would you choose?
Chloe Swarbrick.
Nice. All right. Thank you, Kerry. That was a really good discussion.